roll.
Committee Member Becott.
Present.
Boozy.
Here.
Cromer. Cruz.
Here.
Gillen. Hobson. Rivera.
Here.
Roberts.
Here.
Salee.
Here.
Vice Chair Volin. Chair Stuckey.
Here. Do we have any public comments? Any members of the public? Nothing online?
No.
Nothing by email? Okay. Then we'll move on to the action item. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes of October 13th. Be more than willing to accept the motion.
Motion approved.
Have a motion by Mr. Salee, a second from Mr. Becott. Any comments, questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Second item. Consideration of proposed amendments to the Mayberry Public Safety Expenditure Plan to fund police vehicles, drones, first responder operations, and counseling services for police personnel. Are we going to have a presentation?
We do, Mr. Speaker. We have a PowerPoint presentation, but we're also.
Okay.
Coupled with the staff report that was already been provided.
So thank you all. I really do appreciate everybody being here today. Excuse me, as always. So I think everybody knows me, but just in case, my name is Phil Collins.
But may I say something? But you all might not realize that this is Assistant Chief Phil Collins.
Newly. Can I give this head time to go back down the normal size?
We don't have a mic, sir.
You're about 2 weeks late. First, let me be among the last to wish everyone a happy new year. Second, I would like to introduce our new member of the committee, Lee Cruz.
Hello.
Welcome. I'll leave it to you to introduce yourselves as time permits.
Okay.
So, thank you. Assistant Chief.
Thank you. In case you didn't know, the fine lady to my right is Chief Roxanne Kennedy of the Police Department. Thank you so much for the words, Chief. I appreciate it. I'm also joined by several other members who are actually almost our entire command team. Today, our entire command team. So seated right to my left is Chief Miriam Fox.
Chief, wow.
I'm sorry.
Congrats.
Congratulations.
Promotions all around.
Sorry, it was Chief Petty Officer.
Well, no one did. Able Chief. Captain Fox oversees our Sport Operations Division. Sorry, that changed. Am I blushing? Investigations Division, yeah. And also oversees our drone mass first responder program. Did I get that one right? Okay, got one. And then seated to the left of Captain Fox is Lieutenant Rusty Ree. Lieutenant Ree is in charge of our traffic. Our traffic division also happens to be our police department's fleet manager for our vehicle fleet. To the left of Lieutenant Ree.
Can you go get name tags?
Really nice. Captain Peake is in charge of, what's that again? Oh, that's right, our patrol operations division, the largest division of this province, all the uniformed officers, black and white patrol cars, things that see the field. And then all the way to the left is Captain Peake, is Captain Henry Martin. Captain Henry Martin is in charge of the support operations division, which is not our internal affairs and human resources, all the support services that the police department keep in the list. Our last police person. Oh, and then of course, yes, our administrative services manager, the ever-present and ever-famous Jonathan. So, really wanted to take the time to say thank you and thank you, Chair Stuckey. Equally happy New Year. I hope everybody had a wonderful, healthy, and safe and warm holiday season. 2023 came faster than ever for me because they tend to speed up over time. Before you and in your staff report is a consideration of a request to amend the public safety expenditure plan to fund police vehicles. To expand our police department's drone first responder program and to provide
additional counseling services to our personnel, all personnel here in the police. The funding source for this, real quickly, is basically the fund balance that remains existing in the ED portion of the Measure A fund. That fund balance, as of this report, currently sits at about $21.6 million. And based on prior discussions and decisions of the measure of this very commission, that fund balance is mostly available based on the amount of funds in there for non-staffing purposes, for the most part, which we have some flexibility. So all of these things here today are non-staffing sources, and I'm going to go through them real briefly, one by one. So the first item in your staff report talks about the vehicle fleet expansion. So just a little bit of background, of course, we're a police department, we have police cars. We currently have 44 police cars that are black and white, used by police officers in the field, that they share. We have about 78 police officers in our patrol operations division. They work anywhere from 30 to 56 patrol shifts every single day. And so those 44 vehicles are shared by all of those shifts and all of those people. But in reality, some of our patrol cars go out, out of service for various reasons, maybe replacement, repair, or fixes or something. On average, we have about 15 cars out of service at any given time, so that actually leaves us closer to 29 police vehicles shared by all of those officers. Well, because we don't have a very large vehicle fleet, all of those vehicles are pooled vehicles. What I mean by that is they're not assigned to individual officers, they're not even assigned to teams of officers. Instead, there are a bunch of vehicles parked in the parking lot, and when an officer gets ready to go out on their shift at the beginning of their shift, they look and see what cars are available. Hopefully there's at least one car that they can take and go out on the shift, although sometimes there's not even that, and they have to wait for a car to come back in from the field so that they can take that car. In addition, those small number of cars means that these cars are being driven practically all the time sometimes. It's many times where it's hot seating cars, where an officer comes in from the shift, they're dropping their car off, and that car is going right back out again on the next shift coming out. That's certainly not always the case, but it does, it can happen. So this results in a number of issues that the police department has had for quite some time. Obviously the cars, as you can imagine, get a lot of significant usage. Because there is no assignments to these cars, they're just sort of like picking your loaner car for that shift. There's not a whole lot of sort of personal ownership and accountability for that car when they're out, because they know in about 10 hours, they're going to drop that car off and then it can be somebody else's problem. That results in accelerated wear and tear of the vehicles. You get a little bit of a lower life cycle out of the vehicles. Currently, we are on average replace cars about every 6 years. As I said, throughout the officers have to wait for the vehicle. So this proposal was born out of our uniform division, actually came from Lieutenant Reed, I think, yeah. Who's our fleet manager. Seeing all this, recommended that we actually looked at the numbers and realized that we could add about 20 cars to our fleet, which would give us enough cars so that we could actually assign individual patrol cars to a small number of officers. At this point, planning on 2 officers per patrol car. What that means is that every officer is almost like assigned their own car. It doesn't mean that they're taking it home because the car will stay here. In fact, that car will be shared by at least one other officer on like an opposite shift. So when one officer's off, another officer can be driving the car. But it's only 2 officers that share that one car. And if one officer gets in and finds that there's a nail in the tire and the engine oil light has been on for a while, there's only one other officer to blame, which results in greater accountability for the maintenance of these vehicles, making them more available for our staff to use the field, decrease in time that officers have to wait for vehicles to return to the station or anything like that, actually expands the life cycle of these vehicles. Based on projection, we think that likely means that these vehicles will last closer to about 9 years rather than 6 and 4 years. And by the way, part of the city's initiative has worked towards being a more green city, is moving toward environmentally friendly vehicles, including electric vehicles. Now currently, the types of electric vehicles out there, the infrastructure that exists, doesn't support that for the police department, but we are continuing to make ever slow progress toward that eventual goal. And one of the main barriers to that today would be just the pure fact that if you think about electric vehicles, they need time to charge. And if you have one car, car that comes in and immediately goes back out in the field or goes back out in the field a few hours later, that's not enough time to charge. So this movement also moves us closer to that eventual ideal of having more green, a more greener fleet in the future. So if it's any testament to what we expect in terms of accountability and reduced maintenance on these cars, we do actually have a sort of a testimonial that happened a number of years ago, because we used to do the same thing with our police radios. Our police radios cost thousands of dollars. They used to be a pooled fleet. Officers would come on shift and they'd pick a radio out of, you know, dozens and dozens that were in a shared room, and they'd use that radio for about 10 hours and turn them in. And I recently spoke to our former radio technician, who just retired, who couldn't say enough about the time from when we switched to that pooled radio fleet to actually assigning radios to individual officers. And the number and frequency and cost of repairs dropped dramatically, just because of that increased accountability and increased commercial perspective. So we expect much the same feature in our cars and our radio. It is far more complex, but we do. The total cost to increase that is about $2.3 million in one-time cost this year. And then there is varying costs in hundreds of thousands of dollars annually, and that's both for repairs, ongoing maintenance as necessary, as well as we are wrapping up money in the plan for eventually those cars replacement down the road. So that is the vehicle fleet proposal. If there's questions on that, or I can go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, since we're talking three different, distinctly different types of proposals, I'll ask questions after each section. So any questions on the purchase of additional vehicles?
What type of vehicles are you planning on getting? Hybrids or straight gas?
So these would be the same as our current patrol fleet since 2020. Every patrol vehicle we have that we purchased since 2020 is a Ford Police Interceptor Utility Hybrid. So all of our current fleet model year 2020 on for patrol are actually hybrids, and we'll continue with that.
Okay.
There is Chevy will be producing an electric car, they say, next year. But we have yet to see it or have any tests on it. But that may be the first mass-produced electric police vehicle.
Anybody? I got a couple.
Sure.
How many injuries do you get from putting the equipment into the back of a car anyway?
It's a great question. I wish I knew. It's a great point. Patrol officers these days, all of our field staff these days, carry a whole bunch of equipment. The size of the equipment bags has probably grown exponentially from the time when I was in patrol. Fortunately, we have these big lockers in the parking garage where they can store those bags when they're not on duty. But they do have to put them in the car at the start of their shift and take them out of the car. They're big enough that we actually see officers backing their patrol cars up to these lockers. If you're lucky enough to have a high locker, that means when you start your shift, you can just kind of slide that bag out and it drops right into the trunk. But then at the end of your shift, you got to get that bag. And that locker.
If I could add, back injuries are a significant problem in law enforcement in general. We have the outer vest and different things that we all try to deal with to minimize that. But the taking in and out, anything that we can do to minimize the stress and it's really a morale thing as well, too, and beyond many other things, to be able to provide something like this for officers. But injuries are the thing that is the most difficult thing to deal with in law enforcement. We lose a lot of people to injury.
I think we've more serious answer than the question deserves.
Well, it's a really good point, because back injuries are so common in the public safety field that even the state of California, which you consider them presumptive as being more clear. Yeah. That's how common.
More serious question. Last April, when a request was made for Measure 8 funds to purchase additional vehicles, you said the pooled vehicle ranging was sufficient for positions that are spread across a variety of shifts, such as patrol shifts and for positions that primarily work in an office setting and do not require a vehicle at all times, such as detectives and administrators. The pooled vehicle arrangement saves taxpayer resources by reducing expenditures while maintaining operational effectiveness and also helps reduce ecological impacts by limiting expansion of the vehicle fleet unnecessarily. What's changed?
Well, a few things. I don't know that so much has changed, but it's just a matter of perspective, at least in my opinion, on how you look at it. Because there is indeed, certainly if we did not have 20 additional vehicles in expanded fleet, there is fiscal savings. We'd be saving $2.2 million. Now that has other, though, perhaps less calculable costs that aren't accounted for in the prior staff report. Things like the morale that the chief of police mentioned, for example. The value of accountability and ownership toward the vehicle fleet that were options. The reduced chance of having officers have to sit in the station waiting for a car to come in when they should be out on the street. So I don't think that it's so much of a change in what the two perhaps models represent. If anything, it's a change in what model best suits the organization to serve this community today.
Okay. Thank you.
Did you have
something? Maybe worth noting also that we are still maintaining pools in some assignments in some areas, yeah. But the pools need to be smaller to maintain accountability. And so we still have pools from the sergeant vehicle. It's a smaller group and other things along those lines. So it's not, we're not switching everybody to this program. It's really just for the really large group of patrol officers that have a vehicle.
So someone may still be able to leave the French fries in the vehicle and no one will find out.
Yes.
And for some of our cars, yeah. I mean, the reality is between, I mean, at a certain point, it was actually Lieutenant Reed, we started looking at some of these issues and identified that, we could just get about 20 more cars and we can really increase ownership, accountability, responsibility, while also increasing morale, increasing injuries, so on and so forth. And that proposal came forward, what a matter, a month or two ago, right? It wasn't that, maybe a little bit longer than that. But
most recently. It
more recently.
May have been presented before. But.
Oh, okay, got it. well, the proposal came aware to me and so as we're looking at potential future of the organization and looking at revenues, resources, upcoming expenses and needs, and we see that, okay, here's a great value for the organization, and here's a resource that we can actually utilize as the opposite of officer work. There's another component of this, that the entire law enforcement, in fact, I think probably the entire public safety employment profession, if not the employment profession all across all industries, is struggling far more today to recruit and retain good cops. And so that morale isn't just for the goodwill and good feeling of the officers that provide service to the community, but every little thing we can do to boost their morale, to give them, sort of make sure that they know that they are trusted and treated like adults, that they are responsible for their work, and that they have the resources they need to do the job, the very difficult job we're asking them to do, we believe helps us toward those retention efforts to the long term.
Well said.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Super quickly, parking garage, you're going to have space for these? Because it's pretty tight in that lens.
So we've changed our parking facility. We used to have marked spots for every patrol car. We have reduced that. Now they're open spots for patrols. So that will allow, that has expanded our ability to park cars in that parking garage. And then the other part of this is working with our public works and shops facility, because it will also save some of our time. Our hope is that we'll be able to take a small portion of the ones that aren't assigned and leave them at shops, because we always have cars there that need work. And now officers will be able to, when their car is wrecked instead of, or needs repair or needs an oil change, instead of having two officers drive a car down, drop it off, go back into the field, and then drive down and pick it back up, they'll be able to take their assigned car down and drop it off, pick up one of the spares, and then do the same thing. And so we're not wasting officers driving back and forth in pairs, and we can just have one person. So we'll have some cars down there.
Thank you. I have a comment and then a question. So if I'm understanding this correctly, is one that'll probably help you in regards to recruiting people too, because if they feel like they're gonna get an assigned car, then be in the middle of a pool where they don't know what car they're gonna receive. The second question is, how does call-offs play into this?
You mean if a certain officer calls off?
Yeah.
Shift?
Yeah.
So the way we're gonna share the cars will be person on day shift during the week and a person on day shift during the weekend. And they'll be the ones that shave the car. Obviously, if you come in on overtime, if your car is available, if your counterpart isn't there, you're going to take your assigned car, regardless of when you come in. If your counterpart is there, there will be a small group of pool cars available for people that are working overtime, available when cars go down for maintenance. I mean, we technically have enough cars to do it right now, but if any car needed an oil change or a tire, or we had somebody come on an overtime, it would all go out the window. Mm-hmm. So we will maintain a small pool of cars available for backfill runs.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. Proceed.
All right. Chair Stuckey, if you don't mind, I'd like to go to the third section of the proposal, because we just talked a little bit about physical health,
sure,
and wellness, and retention. And the third part of the proposal has to do with counseling services, which is wellness services for organizations. I thought that was a nice time there. As you all know, public safety officers work in a relatively unique field in terms of their exposure to highly stressful incidents. There's a study, a report that says your average public safety officer is exposed to about 188 critical incidents over a career. 188 in a career. The average person is exposed to about 5 to 10 an entire life. So that repeated, if not constant, exposure to traumatic events, like different calls for services and crimes, results in a whole wealth of challenges when it comes to mental health, wellness, and physical. That level of cumulative stress, the type of stress that doesn't go away when you take off the uniform, follows those officers, those employees, those servants throughout their entire career, and sometimes throughout their entire life. It can lead to negative thoughts, poor emotions, poor performance, and challenging relationships, and even mental health crisis. As an anecdote, we recently had an officer who we had hired, recruited, spent all the time sending them and training them to the academy, spent all the time after the academy getting them trained in the tools the police way. And while during training, they responded to a couple stressful incidents and decided, I don't think I'm mentally or strong. So this wellness thing really does impact both recruiting, retention, and even fiscal responsibilities. There's a USA Today study on suicide in the public safety profession. An interesting note, police officers are more likely to die by suicide than they are to be killed in the line of duty. In fact, in 2020, there was 113 line of duty deaths and 116 suicides. 46 officers were actually shot by suspects of battery or something. So that means more than triple that number are actually killing themselves. As an anecdote, 1 week, sorry, into 2022 alone, the Chicago Police Department lost 3 officers individually to suicide in 1 week alone. And this isn't exclusive to police. Our partners in the fire and emergency medical go through the same sort of challenges. That gets coupled as well with the sort of cultural stigma that exists in police agencies and public safety agencies, and many agencies for that matter, all across the country and around the world. In 2019, the University of Phoenix produced a study that revealed that nearly half of first responders believe that if they go seek help, there will be negative job repercussions for them. So there's a lack of desire to seek help out of that fear. Now, we currently in the police department and the city of Chula Vista have a number of services that we offer to our employees. We have an incredibly supportive peer support program in the organization. We have counselors on call. We do post-traumatic stress briefings during certain incidents. We have employee programs, EAP programs here with the city, health programs with the city, and more. In the police department, we've even gone further by offering an application called Portico, which we offer for free to all of our employees to download on their phone, which gives them access to information about mental health and wellness right in their pocket. And yet, we still recognize that this continues to be a struggle around the entire country. Nationally, in fact, suicide rates for public safety did not improve at all in 2020, and suicide rates in other areas have been on the decline. Even Congress recently passed the Public Safety Officer Support Act 2022 to help address this very key fact. So our proposal, while there's many things we're doing today, we know that we can do more. And our proposal is to do exactly that. Currently, the tool is the fire department, we try to copy for everything. Uses an organization called iFocus. They offer counseling services to any employee, in this case, in the police department, for a variety of needs that they may have. They also offer a variety of other services besides counseling, but that's the main thing to start talking about. It includes, indeed, in fact, stresses that can't be proven to be work-related, so it helps cover a gap there. I mean, in the end, I talked a little bit about the wellness challenge, the health and the safety of our employees is one of the most important things for this organization. So we want to be able to provide that better wellness and mental health for our employees, for better mental and emotional stability, and also for employee retention. Because our officers have to be in the right mind before they come to work and try to provide the right services to our people. So we're asking for the support to contract with Focus based on their experience at the fire department, also by the way with many other public safety agencies in the county of San Diego, and that cost is about $20,000 per year.
Okay. Any questions from the group?
Does that cost like per employee or just for the whole department? Does it matter if you increase more officers?
So the 20,000, that's a great question. The 20,000 cost as is for the entire police department. It's not even just for officers, it's for all professional staff. Captain Martin, do you know if that cost goes up if we add more officers?
I don't believe so.
What that is it's a $20,000 retainer. And so if we did determine that we started using it more, we could potentially come back at some point, but we don't anticipate spending more than $20,000.
Okay, yeah, I thought that was a really great round number. I thought it was very inexpensive, and that's why I wanted to know the parameters. I didn't know if it was per use, that they're not going to report specific employee uses or services to the city, and it's unlimited. So I wasn't sure if it's like $20,000 like all you can get, or if it wasn't based on how many times they go, how many people use it.
The way the agreement is written, it's unlimited.
I think
that's
the chief
awesome. Is exactly right. In the future, I would have no doubt if indeed there was some significant use of of Focus, I wouldn't be at all surprised if Focus came back after the expiration of this contract and said, hey, we need to talk about increasing this dollar amount you guys are using a lot. And we don't anticipate that. But, you know,
no,
but at this point,
that's a fair price.
I have two questions. First, I know the answer to this, but I'd like you to explain how this proposal complies with the mandate of Measure A and the public safety expenditure plan. How does this fit into that?
Measure A started because we didn't have enough police officers. We had lost police officers from pretty much starting in the 2008 recession and had never made up that loss. And it had been a decade since 2000. So the number of officers that we have on staff is right in line with right now, we're losing officers, some officers, because of retention. Some circumstances, like the anecdote I just explained, are directly related to the officers feeling of their mental health, wellness, and safety. So the more we can reduce retention, the more public safety officers we have to put out on the street to protect our community. So it actually helps us retain the officers, so we're not continually trying to dig ourselves out of it.
And if I could further add, we've discovered through over 30 years the cumulative effect of the job and not addressing it impacts people. We lost people that were great people that we could have done something in the beginning. We think that we would have retained them and they would have been gone. So this is a very small price to pay to show new employees that they're valued and that we want them to be helped.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. In your narrative, you talked about the importance of practitioners being contemplate having professional staff embedded with the police department, or someone dedicated strictly to police, or how does that work? Or is that figured out yet?
It'd be way more money than 20.
Yeah, no one embedded with the police department, for sure. So there are resources at PICUS that are obviously experts in public safety, in writing the purpose of public safety, for sure. And that's part of the reason why my book was chosen, was because of that. Familiarity and that professional experience. But this isn't a dedicated counselor. This isn't a full-time person or anything like that. This is, after all, a service provider who has expertise in this area and has counseling support and other experts that work with them that help provide this to the largest family organization at $20,000 as opposed to way more than actually.
If I could really quick, sorry, Courtney Chase, Director of Human Resources, and can't keep my mouth shut sometimes, just so good. We have found, even through EAP, because we pay for it as citywide as a whole, but people think we have access to know who's going, when they're going. We don't, but I think this provided with focus. Having someone on site, I think then people start to talk about who talks about it, and as I see, that's not across the table. I don't think there would be a likelihood that a lot of people would go just because of the feeling that comes with it, so keeping it separate and private. I think some people would use it if there was someone on site, but keeping it separated from the city and having that wall where we never know who goes, we just know how many visits there are, is helpful.
And what I'm doing now with critical incidents is I'm encouraging all employees to go seek out, and it's on their own. We don't know anything, we don't get a report. We just want them to go so that they can go through the process of understanding what happens when you're involved in a critical incident, and we've gotten real positive feedback on that. Okay.
Anybody else?
I just have a comment.
Sure.
City of PD has been using the focus group for years, and it has been very beneficial to the officers and the employees going there. The Santa Pita PD has had a number of officers commit suicide. It has also helped officers avoid a drinking problem or a drug problem, because there is somebody that understands public safety and is able to help them anonymously. So like I say, it doesn't go to the police department, nobody there knows about it. In this day and age, I think this is critical, just as important as anything else that you can provide for the employees, if not more critical in some cases. To have that voice, because it is getting worse and worse every day. I think we've seen it on the streets and just in the news, where officers stressed out and did things improperly that cost the city a lot of money, or a lot of the agencies a lot of money, and a lot of grief.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Third part.
Hey, thanks, Chair Stebbie. So the middle part, the third part, is regarding nighttime operations for our emergency first responder program. I mean, I think pretty much everybody in the commission, for the most part, probably is familiar with our drone first responder program. This program is currently supported by Measure A, based on the decision of the commission from a year or two ago, and currently funds a full-time lieutenant, a full-time sergeant, and two full-time officers, if I remember correctly, in support of that program. It also funds a separate contract that we have to provide what we call pilots in command, civilian people that are required by the FAA to maintain airspace awareness, basically eyes on the roof that can see the sky. Because our drone operators, those officers, those experts, are actually down in a sequestered room in the first floor of the police department, remotely operating drones from a sort of a TV screen, if you will. So this drone program, if you're not familiar, has been an absolutely incredible benefit to the efficiency of the organization, effectiveness of the police department, the safety of the officers, and the safety of our community. It's been cool. It has been lauded around the world, and this police department was the first and only department doing anything like this. But not anymore. Others are starting to pick it up, and we think we're very happy for it, because we really feel that this is the future of this, and so we're glad to have sort of started it here. Our drones that we have, they currently fly from any one of five potential locations around the city. And that flying is all done remotely. So there's literally an officer sitting at a desk in front of a computer that's monitoring 911 calls as they come in, monitoring the police radio traffic, and essentially with the push of a button, they can choose to launch a drone, so
guy fly out remotely out to the scene of an incident or the scene of a crime and be sort of on station overhead, providing direct real-time intelligence while ground units are rushing to get. This does tremendous things for the organization. I'll describe in just a minute, but I did want to mention that since 2018, the drone as first responder program has flown well over 13,000 missions. The average time it takes a drone to get on scene is about 3.5 minutes. That's less than half the average time it takes a ground unit to get on scene to many of our targeted calls. The drone is in fact first on scene about 60% of those calls that they responded to. Believe it or not, 25% of the time of those missions that a drone has been out, the drone, just by visual observation over the scene, reduces the need to send additional patrol resources, saving officers time so they can go handle other things in the community. Great example of that, maybe a traffic collision that an officer is responding to, the drone gets overseen, officers might be dispatched, but drone can immediately see, oh yeah, it looks like it was a fender bender, and both vehicles are now driving away. There is no need to have an officer respond to that call. We don't need fire to respond to that call. We can't tell everybody who can go handle things. The drone itself is assisted in about 1,600 arrests in their responsibility list, which is numerous examples of that. That police officer, that remote operator, that teleoperator operating that drone is a trained police officer. It's immensely valuable because they understand what the officers who are responding to that call might want to see, might need to know. When, in the event something happens immediately, such as there's an assault that the drone operator sees, they're recording evidence of that. They can direct officers into that. If a suspect flees, they can follow that and provide that information to responding officers to help them capture that information. The drone video can be live streamed literally to incident commanders and others in the field, where they can literally see that aerial video live on their phone. This provides immensely greater real-time information about whatever the scene or incident or circumstance is that those officers are responding to before they round the corner into the danger zone. This helps them in many circumstances slow down their response, make sure they have the best tools and the best strategies to respond, which helps them de-escalate a situation, apprehend offenders, reduce victimization, and stop crime. The VFR program has been around for quite a long time now. They currently fly during the day, basically morning until about sunset in the daytime. But the majority of our call volume as a police department is actually between about noon and 11 p.m., which means after the sunset's currently around 5 o'clock or so, we're still getting the majority of our calls and emergency calls too, priority calls, in those evening hours when there's no drone available because we don't have the resource capacity, haven't had the resource capacity to fly it. In addition to that, we as a police organization have been very methodical about our approach to this brand new innovative strategy to make sure that we are ironing out every kink we can and doing it right for our organization before we dive into the deep end and realize we're in trouble. But the drone program is now in a situation where we are ready to expand to actually provide nighttime operations to help keep the officers that are working the nights, the busiest shift that we have, nights, weekends specifically actually right now, to help keep them safe, to help them respond better to their calls as they're going to help keep the community safe during those hours when they're calling us most. So this proposal is to expand the contractual services for those pilots in command. That's the civilian contractor, the eyes on the roof I talked about, to provide drone services into the nighttime hours on the weekends. And that's our sort of first step into the nighttime and evening drone operations. Our officers will also be adding more officers to that, but we'll be utilizing doing that on an overtime basis at this time as we continue to expand the drone program and push into the new era. So the costs for this are about $107,536,000 this fiscal year, and annually about 323,000 dollars per year.
Okay. Questions?
What's the range of your rooms?
Yeah, I'm glad I brought my drone.
So we have authorization from the FAA to have 3 nautical miles beyond visual line of sight. So, but we typically, the two locations that we plan to fly from, here from the PD and from Bayview, our southern location, based on calls for service. So we'll probably fly within 3 miles, and there's a little bit of overlap. So we'll cover this part of the city and then south.
But right now, just to let you know, we fly from 4 different locations right now. We have the capability of going 5, but when you figure that out, we almost cover the entire city. So, but what we want to do is just go from 2 locations to test it out, see how it works with nighttime. So we'll be able to cover quite a bit of our community.
With the 2 locations, it'll be about technically like 70% basically, but so the radius of the 2 locations.
Yeah, looking at your map, I was covered, so I was happy.
Well, we go to nighttime operations, at least at this early, those 2 locations are the left 2 red dots on that map. It's the Chula Vista Police Headquarters building and the Bayview facility listed there, and so you can kind of see the circles around there, and that'll give you an idea of our flying.
And those are the 2 busiest areas where we get the most calls for service at that time of the evening. So it's good, we're going to benefit from that community.
Any other questions?
So they aren't just like roaming around. It's when you get a call or you get something on the radio, and then you launch them.
That's
no so random patrol. Because yeah. I'm like, are we being censored?
No.
Like, you see them there, like, huh.
Yeah, I had a whole section on privacy concerns when it comes to the drone. I didn't touch on it because we have talked about it a lot over the course of the last couple of years. But to put it real simply, yes, our drones only respond to a demand. It's a calls for service, a crime, something happened. Community calls needs to send officers out there, needs a drone. Only to a call for service. They don't fly proactively. They don't randomly patrol the city in any way. They're never used for surveillance purposes. Even when they do fly, they take really careful measures to make sure that we're not accidentally recording or observing things we shouldn't be. For example, the drones are programmed in such a way that when the operator presses a button, for example, to return that drone to home, I think is what it's called, the camera on the drone that the operator's monitoring the scene from automatically tilts up and zooms way out so it's not zooming in on any accidental backyard or survey. And in fact, there is so much information on our website get to, including if you saw a police drone overhead and wondering what the heck is the drone doing over there, every single flight that our drone flies pops up on our website. Not the video, because we need to protect people's privacy, but the exact flight time, date, the reason for the flight, and exactly where the drone flew in our city.
Yeah. So when you say nighttime hours, like early morning?
No, not early morning. So currently we fly till morning time. That can vary a little bit to about sunset. That changes because sunset changes. I got all this education just like an hour ago, by the way. Thank you. And the plan is to extend that until, consider around midnight.
Good question. I know the police department run the program. However, it's my understanding that at least on occasion, the fire department is able to take advantage of the situational awareness with the camera as well. Is that still the case?
Whenever Harry wants.
So I guess just a comment on that is it's not just the part of the program. It enhances all public safety operations, including fire. And if there's a fire
traffic
or
traffic accident
is, we do share that feed with the battalion chiefs and the firefighters on the ground so that they can use their best tactics. So it benefits all aspects.
Sounds like you have some familiarity.
Yeah, yeah. He's
been very quiet.
I'm just waiting to tell you.
Yes. Vernon Wilde is the drone trainer very well, as one of the persons who got started.
Yeah.
And he's responsible for it. And indeed, 100% correct. And not just in the public service, what we think is public safety, but missing children in the park, a large storm with floods. All of these things the drone can assist on. As long as the weather permits it, as long as the sky permits it, as long as the law permits it, the drone can be a tremendous resource.
budget. The drone program is, at this point, used up about 75% of its budget in the first half of the fiscal year. So, what is the wisdom of incurring additional expenses when it's already projected, could be projected to be a significantly lower budget for the year? Here are my budget pages.
I think it really boils down to what you believe the value of the program is. And we've had to do a lot of things at the police department to build this program and get the credibility of the program. And as we continue, we're starting to see that the city is valuing the program much more. The community is valuing the program much more. I can't imagine not operating with the drone program right now, especially when you look at the challenges we have in staffing and the benefit that it gives to giving our officers more information to make better decisions so we don't fall into a use encounter. So to me, I understand your concern with the budget, but sometimes I think you have to take risks for things that are for the greater good of what the benefit of this program is.
Your answer?
Of course it is. If there was a specific, I was looking at the budget document.
Sarah can add.
Oh, God, I was looking at the budget document. I was trying to find it.
Yeah, I was looking at the budget.
I was just going to say, so one of the things that you looked at, Sarah, Shane, finance director, when you look at Measure A's budget right now, the revenue budget is higher than the expenditure budget. Mm-hmm. So there is room with our ongoing revenues to increase this. While there might be an overage in the current budget as it sits, there is current year projected revenue that should exceed the expenditure budget. I think it's like $2 million upside down, if I remember correctly. So there is a little bit of room to increase. Well, right. I mean, I understand that there's vehicles,
yeah.
But the vehicles are more of a one-time cost that are going to come out of the existing fund balance. Not necessarily ongoing.
So the greater concern is the overall budget rather than the line item having to do with the drone program.
Well, I'm just saying we didn't budget every dollar of revenue that's expected to come in this year. I think the revenue is expected to come in at, like, I want to say it's $26 million, but we only budgeted bottom line at $20 million. So there's room there to increase the budget just based on the annual revenues that are coming in. There's room to grow the drone program without dipping into fund balance.
So we're looking at the budget more as a guideline rather than a goal.
Well, I think you set the budget at the beginning of the year based on the expenditures that you anticipate. But when you have an opportunity, because you have more revenues to increase because you want to expand the program, then that's something that you take back to the oversight committee and then take back to city council. That's why there's, within the guidelines of how the budget is managed, when we go forward with monitoring, of course, and that sort of thing, it requires 4/5 of the council to approve a budget amendment, but you have a budget amendment process for those types of things that happen outside of the, I'm preparing the budget for this year cycle, so.
Well, I appreciate the chief's answer about weighing the value of it against the cost.
I just wanted you to know that there was.
I appreciate that.
While we're on the budget, I'm sorry to take us down a rabbit hole. What's the projection percentage-wise going into 2023 versus 2022?
The increase?
Yes, on Measure A funds.
Sorry, looking at my budget. It was an increase. The revenue was an increase of 12%. That's $2.7 million increase in 23 compared to 22.
Okay.
That's total, not split.
Thank you. Any other questions on any of the three phases of this proposal?
Quick comments, if you don't mind.
Please, Sheriff.
The Police Officers Association looked in depth at all three of these proposals and kind of took them separately and looked at what they offer to our members and how they impact their careers and their lives. And we can tell you unequivocally that these three improve the lives of our officers and the work lives and the careers of our officers. So I want to speak in support of it simply because we have been staunchly supportive of adding bodies to the streets and putting new people in uniforms and in police cars to make our community safer. And this plan right here, while it doesn't add new bodies, it makes the ones that we currently have better and more efficient. So as far as a PUA representative, I would like to say that we support all of them.
Any other comments?
I love all the plans, but when I get to page 13, and this is my first meeting, I run a very, very small construction company. So when I see a deficit, that to me would concern me. So when we look at the very bottom line of net fiscal impact, we have a negative, should we be concerned? I'm a small little company, that would concern me. So this is my first meeting, so I was surprised when I saw that. Is more money be allocated from the Measure A funds?
No, I think.
So bottom of page 13, then you have your, I didn't do the whole budget, but I just, after we talked about all of this current year fiscal impact, and on the bottom of page 13, it shows a negative.
Yeah, that negative, those, if I'm looking at the same chart.
Yeah, for the $2,259,780.
Yes, that negative impact merely means that we are asking for $2,259,708 more than is currently in the PSEP. So we're deducting that amount from the plan. This, the net plan ending balance is still well in the positive. It's
okay.
Plan under at $19 million.
We're using the reserves.
The available fund balance, not the reserve.
Okay,
because not the reserve, the available fund balance.
Fiscal year 23 SPEP. That column had a negative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because there's, I mean, there's, if we're adding revenue to the plan, it would be a positive. We're adding money to the plan. In this case, we're asking for more money out of the plan, so it's a negative. But the overall plan balance is still well in the positive.
Well, yeah, but when I go over to the balance sheet, I see that the funds are there. So it's just asking to move them. So once we, if everybody agreed, then we move and then we will be in the black, correct? Am I right on that?
You're getting it.
Yeah. Okay. We're still in the black, John.
Yes, it's, so it is using from the available fund balance. As Assistant Chief Collin mentioned, we started our fund balance in the fiscal year with $21 million because all the sales tax revenues that was earned was above our expenditures in prior fiscal years. So we have a healthy fund balance to start off with. It is drawing down from that available fund balance.
Okay, and in 2023 with gas at $4 a gallon and our electric bill just went up 130, I think, for propane, we don't think that there might be less income this year?
The income that's projected by the finance department is based on the sales tax revenues. So if you look at the attachment one, which is the following page, it shows the 10-year spending plan for our police expenditure plan, and it shows that even at year 10, we're still at a positive fund balance with these proposed requests.
Okay, so I think if people start spending $130 more, I think was the average that our STG&E bill went up this month,
mm-hmm.
would they not go out and buy that TV at Walmart where you maybe give the gifts that sales tax, or maybe they're not gonna be spending their money at restaurants, et cetera, those sales tax would be drawn from. Is that a concern at all?
In this case, no, because
okay.
SDG&E funds, so the city has a number of budgets, Measure A is just one.
Okay.
The SDG&E funds and things like that are made out of each separate budget that isn't even reflected on the charts that are here. So this in this case, the measure for money for Measure A is just exclusively the tax revenue from Measure A that was passed a number of years ago. It's not reflected on all the other revenue sources and existing budgets. City has, including things like SDG&E, fuel costs for other vehicles, things like that.
You say, well, people but may not be spending as much as.
I think that's the point is that the public may not be spending money that's taxable because they have to pay their gas and electric bill. Or
I think that just I'm out of hand, but there's probably a balance there. They may spend less as inflation increases, but as it increases the cost of the goods, it actually increases the taxes as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if something costs more, the taxes are going to be higher. So there's a little bit of a balance there.
And in the end, I'm not a director of finance by any shape of the imagination. I really rely on our partners in the finance department, our experts here in the police department. We do the budgeting, of course, all the time. I am happy to hear that even from what they projected, tax revenue might be this upcoming year. It's looking about 12% higher than even the projections were, notwithstanding the changes.
obviously, Measure A has always been a moving, flexible plan, part of the purpose of this commission. And so, as things progress in the future, if we did see some potential impact, it would be this commission, in fact, is very vital. That would be receiving reports from the finance department and others.
I see the finance department shaking her head back there.
I just want to clarify.
Oh, thank you.
We're not projecting to come in 12% over what we budgeted for 23. What he had asked me was what was the change from 22 to 23. So,
Kevin. Thank you.
Just want to clarify. I don't have even more money this year.
Why don't we save the budget for another occasion? We have a proposal by the police department, and I just want to make a couple of comments. One, some of the questions I asked may have appeared impertinent, probing, but I like the answers. And I appreciate the chief's comment about looking at the value as opposed to just the cost. I appreciate the desire to improve morale. I happen to have a grandson as a deputy sheriff, so I know some.
Well, we can hire
him. It is an issue, and to the extent that anything can be done to improve morale, to improve retention, I'm in favor of. And it's a lot cheaper to hire to retain someone than just to hire someone. And that goes across the board, not just from the police department, but across that. Society. So I am in favor of this proposal. I appreciate it. It's well thought out, and I can endorse it. So with that, is there a motion?
Second.
Any further discussion?
Is that for all three proposals?
Yeah, for all three.
Yes.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Ray Smith. As the chief said, I'm deputy chief of EMS, and happy new year to everybody. So we're here to give you an update on our ambulance transport service, which is about 18 months old now, but we did just finish up our first full year, or first full calendar year, and this will be the update for 2022. So in 2022, we responded to 26,800, approximately 800 incidents, and we completed 19,600 patient transports. So obviously not every response turns into a transport. Sometimes people decide they don't need to go to the hospital once we get there, or maybe someone else is gonna take them. So 26,000 incidents and 19,000 transports. That averages out to about 53 transports per day. So that's right about where we need to be. Along with those transports, another metric that we're concerned with is our response compliance. And right now we're at 96, or at least for the year, we were at 96%. So that means that the ambulance is on scene within 12 minutes, 96% of the time. So that's really good. Some agencies shoot for 90. We've raised the bar, and we're at over 96%. So we're super happy about that. With lots of medical aid responses comes an increase in the use of medical supplies. We did underestimate that a little bit. So we have now caught up. We have actually hired an inventory specialist who we're really happy to have. He's got a pretty good experience of warehouse experience, and He's got kind of an IT background, so he, I think he's going to take us to the next step here. We are constantly recruiting and hiring good people, EMTs and paramedics, and they're all super happy to be serving the citizens of Chula Vista. In fact, many of them go on from the ambulance service into fire suppression and become firefighters. And recently, we've had two go on go into fire prevention, one in our department, one in a neighboring department. So so it's good to see these ambulance employees come in, do a great job, and then move their careers on. We're super excited for 2023. We've got some exciting things in store, and we want to thank you for Measure A and all your support. And I'll hand it over to Emily to talk more about the numbers.
Yeah, my name is Emily Folker. I am a principal management analyst for the fire department. I get to talk about the loan that you guys so graciously gave us for our startup of the program. So we originally approved for $4.8 million. Once we actually launched the system, we were able to kind of use our existing ALS fund balance, and we actually only ended up utilizing about $3.2 million of that loan. So at the end of FY22, the system was successful, as Chief Smith spoke about, so we were able to make a loan payment of $500,000 on that Measure A loan. So that brings our new loan balance down to $2.78 million at the end of FY22. So we're still on track to, you know, meet the loan repayment guidelines of 5 years at the end of FY26. If we were to make equal annual loan payments each year, this would be just shy of $700,000 each year to meet that loan repayment in FY26. One of the metrics that contributes to that are federal reimbursement programs. So there are three different programs we could participate at the beginning of this program. There was some uncertainty on exactly when those would actually begin. They are finally lifting off the ground. So we just submitted a cost report for FY22 that we're going to start seeing those revenues in here, FY23. And then the next program is getting ready to start also here in the coming months. We're still working with DHCS on actual timeline of that. So just because of, you know, the uncertainties of when we actually get these cash flows, you guys might notice over the next few years some fluctuations in actual payments towards these loans. The revenues that we're receiving for these federal reimbursements, these are not part of our actual annual operating plan. So these are, you know, we're anticipated to receive these, have these go towards our loan payments, pay off our debt with Measure A and Bank of America to make sure we meet those obligations, and then also fund our reserves, which is the next item we're working on. So originally it was supposed to go February 7th, but there was an update on something that was going on at that council meeting. So now on February 14th, we are taking an item to council that is going to be basically establishing our reserve policy. So, you know, like Measure A, we want to make sure we have some fiscal health just for any uncertainties to keep this going and not have to take out any more loans as we go through the program. So with this reserve policy, we're going to be establishing operational liability, debt obligation, and capital reserves. So, you know, as we close out each fiscal year, it's we want to make sure we pay off our debts, but then we also want to build our reserves. So at the end of FY22, the last time I spoke with finance, the ACFR was still in a pending status, but we were able to build our reserves of about $800,000. So we're working on finding that balance of paying off loans and also funding our, our own reserves. Like Chief Smith touched on, supply costs were a bit of an uncertainty when we launched the program. Our call volume is higher, just what we were anticipated based off information we received at the start of the program. Supply and inflation costs now are a bit of a pain point, but luckily because of our increased call volume, the system was originally built on 48 transports per day. Because we're transporting 53 per day, we're actually able to just eat the cost of inflation in our actual revenue. So it's the intent of the fire department not to increase the transport fee to citizens. Obviously, we're monitoring this as inflation kind of continues, but as of now, we are working on absorbing those increased costs just in our operating budgets and not increase those base rates to citizens. The last item that's impacting the loan is we have started working on expanding our system. So we, how long ago was this? January, we placed an order for 2 more ambulances just because of manufacturing delays. I believe those are finally coming in the next month or so.
April or May,
okay, yeah. So we're still waiting on those. Original talks were potentially utilizing the unused part of the Measure A loan to pay for those. However, looking at our annual cash flow so far, our intent is to be able to actually absorb those just in our annual revenues and not continue to draw on that Measure A loan and instead just continue to make payments. So we're monitoring that as the year goes on. Obviously, we still have another 5 months left in the fiscal year, but that's our update for you guys on the status of the Measure A loan that we took for transport. And if you have any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? No?
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I'm glad to see it work out so well. Next item on the 2022 compliance audit, is there a presentation? Or?
I can just speak to it. So every year we do a compliance audit on Measure A, just to have the auditors look and make sure that we're in compliance with purchase of Measure A and everything's going along. And they came back and stated that we were in compliance in all respects, all material respects, and provides a balance sheet, an income statement. It shows that, you know, to what Emily was speaking to, there was a $500,000 payment on the Measure A loan to transport. The balance is about 2.8 to the 2783. Revenues exceeded expenditures by approximately $11 million, increasing the fund balance from $31.8 million to $42.9 million.
Straightforward.
Those are the highlights.
We have money and we're obeying the rules.
Yep.
Okay.
Cool.
And the FY23 financial report is.
Marisa from my office is going to come talk to you guys.
Good evening.
Oh,
sorry.
I'm Marisa Vargas. I'm the fiscal management analyst for one of the fiscal management analysts for the city. I'm standing in for Ed Trundell, our budget manager, who's here today. You can follow along on pages 26 through 28. I'll reference the numbers reflected on those pages. Let's see, the numbers on those pages are as of January 3rd of 23, and they're unaudited. Any actions that are proposed during tonight's meetings are not reflected on those in those numbers, but they will be reflected in future financial reports. So for the police departments, revenues are budgeted at $13.1 million. We've received $4.8 million to date, which leaves a remaining budget of $8.3. Expenses are budgeted at $13 million with $5.8 in actuals to date, remaining budget of $7.2. Overall, the police department reflects revenues exceeding our city budget by $1.1 million. For the fire department, revenues are budgeted at $12.9. We've received $4.7 to date, leaving a budget of $8.2 million. Expenses are budgeted at 9.3. We've expended $3 million to date. And that leaves a remaining budget of 6.3. Overall, the fire department reflects revenues exceeding budget by 1.9 million. You'll see on page 27 and 28 the same data is reflected. However, it's broken out by division or org. And that is all I have for tonight.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions on that? Appreciate it.
Yay. Thank you.
Yeah, we have so much money. What do we do with all the money? Seeing none. Any comments from staff? Evidently not. I only have one comment. That's Mark for their very thoughtful presentation. I think in the long long term is going to go a significant way to enhance the ability of the police department to carry out its functions as well as retain employees. And as we talked about, that's one of the most important things that can happen is to keep the good folks that are there. So I appreciate that. Thank the committee for showing up tonight. Appreciate it. We're missing a couple, but this is a good attendance as we've had in a while.
Sorry, was the tree one of the many reasons that we hired?
We appreciate you joining us. Any comments from the group?
Thank you.
Just real quick, this is going to be my last meeting. I'm no longer with the chamber, and I represent the Chamber of Commerce, and so they're going to replace me. Just after running for office and trying to do real estate, working 80 plus hours, I thought I'd take a year off and focus back on real estate. So thank you guys. It was great to be here. I really enjoyed it, and hopefully someday I'll be back here again. So.
Anybody else? With that, we're adjourned. Thank you very much.